Good morning, everybody, and welcome to this week's Turning Towards Life. This is Lizzie and Justin from Third Space, and we are here to bring you this wonderful source as chosen by Justin. It's a kind of drizzly Sunday morning here in London. So if you're listening for the first time, we do this from our homes in North London and Southwest London, Justin being North and me being Southwest. And every Sunday, we gather just the two of us, and also everybody who wants to watch live on Facebook, but also people who might want to listen afterwards on YouTube or podcasts, various platforms like Spotify and Apple. And it's quite an amazing thing to be here. It's all unrehearsed, and we love doing it. And so if you're here for the first time, you're very, very welcome. If you are somebody who's been here for a while as well, we are so grateful for your participation in this. And most weeks, Justin and I, or one of us, hears some kind of joy that comes out of this for people, some kind of benefit that comes from listening. And it's such a wonderful thing that we can make a contribution in that way. So thank you so much for being here.
Yes. Good morning, everybody. I echo everything that Lizzie said. And I want to add one thing, which is that if you haven't yet and you want to join our Facebook group, which is where it's the one place that you can be with us live on a Sunday morning, you can also join in the conversation. And that's one of the ways that we get to meet people and people get to meet one another. It's quite a thing to have a community growing around that. So you can search for Turning Towards Life on Facebook, ask to join. We'll gladly welcome you in. So as every week, we've chosen a source to begin our conversation. And this week was my turn. And I've picked a source called The Man Watching, which is by the poet Rainer Maria Rilke. And I think, Lizzie, you and I have often said to one another, what a completely extraordinary thing Rilke was able to do, which was at a very young age, was to write incredibly deeply about the human experience in ways that seem to get right into the heart of things. And I know you and I were talking about this a little bit before we began. This poem I've carried with me for a long time. It's been such a powerful, grounding, kind and fierce resource to have around with me as I go through life's ups and downs and ins and outs. And I've brought it to lots of other people too, and I know that it's really touched many. So that's part of the background to me bringing it. But the other thing to say about it is that you'll see when we read it that right in the heart of it is an image that's a biblical image of Jacob wrestling with the angel. And there is an absolutely extraordinary sculpture of Jacob and the angel in the Tate Gallery in London. And a very, very dear friend of mine, and I, someone who I haven't seen for a very long time, spent some time hanging out with this sculpture, a long time with the sculpture a couple of weeks ago. And my time with her really inspired bringing this poem, which seems to me to arise from the very same source. So we'll post a picture of the sculpture on the Facebook group and on Turning Towards Life later as well. So you can all take a look if you want to see that too. It goes beautifully with the poem. So here it is, I'll read it first. The Man Watching. I can tell by the way the trees beat after so many dull days on my worried window panes that a storm is coming. And I hear the far off field say things I can't bear without a friend. I can't love without a sister. The storm, the shifter of shapes, drives on across the wood and across time, and the world looks as if it had no age. The landscape, like a line in the psalm book, is seriousness and weight and eternity. What we choose to fight is so tiny. What fights us is so great. If only we would let ourselves be dominated, as things do, by some immense storm, we would become strong too and not need names. When we win, it's with small things, and the triumph itself makes us small. What is extraordinary and eternal does not want to be bent by us. I mean the angel who appeared to the wrestlers of the Old Testament. When the wrestlers' sinews grew long like metal strings He felt them under his fingers like chords of deep music. Whoever was beaten by this angel, who often simply declined the fight, went away proud and strengthened and great from that harsh hand that needed him as if to change his shape. Winning does not tempt that man. This is how he grows, by being defeated decisively by constantly greater beings.
The man watching. I can tell by the way the trees beat after so many dull days on my worried window panes that a storm is coming. And I hear the far-off fields say things I can't bear without a friend. I can't love without a sister. The storm, the shifter of shapes, drives on across the woods and across time, and the world looks as if it had no age. The landscape, like a line in the psalm book, is seriousness and weight and eternity. What we choose to fight is so tiny. What fights us is so great. If only we would let ourselves be dominated, as things do, by some immense storm, we would become strong too, and not need names. When we win, it's with small things, and the triumph itself makes us small. What is extraordinary and eternal does not want to be bent by us. I mean the angel who appeared to the wrestlers of the Old Testament. When the wrestlers' sinews grew long like metal strings, he felt them under his fingers like chords of deep music. Whoever was beaten by this angel, who often simply declined the fight, went away proud and strengthened and great from that harsh hand that needed him as if to change his shape. Winning does not tempt that man. This is how he grows, by being defeated decisively by constantly greater beings.
It's really something to hear you read that, Lizzie. One of the things I'm feeling very moved by in this poem is Rilke's willingness to meet head on the seriousness of things. We've made a big deal together here about meeting life playfully and joyfully and all of that, and I think, of course, that's so important and it's not excluded by this. But that he's willing to say, sometimes, maybe often, life is like being thrown around in a giant storm or like being fought by something very large, that he's willing to say that and to include it with such grace and welcome, I find so extraordinarily helpful, because I realize that, I mean, this is how I woke up this morning, which is one tiny little bit of first person experience of something much bigger that's pointed to in the poem. But I woke up, as I often do wake up actually, into something terrible is wrong. Everything is going wrong. And I have to be the one who beats it, but I can't. And that's part of what's going wrong. And it's like, it's such an alienated place to be in the world, because it has me try to stand. It's like trying to haul myself out of a deep well all by myself, or trying to stand in the face of something that I can't stand in the face of. And my demand of myself that I be the one who can sort it, who has the power to make everything okay, is part of the exact pain of the situation. And so Rilke does two things that I'm really appreciating this morning. She does a ton of things I'm really appreciating this morning. But one of the things that I really appreciate is that he names that this is a kind of sacred place to be in. Mm-hmm. Like when you're standing at the window and you can see this giant storm moving across and the landscape flattens to a line, and to to say to us, this is this place matters, and you matter in the middle of it, is such a great relief to me when I read the poem. This moment is stretched out into eternity, and so all of that. And then, of course, maybe the more obvious thing to say, which he says, maybe the work is not to try to beat this, maybe the work is to let it change us. And the line that brings me to the edge of tears every time is the line where he says, and then we won't need names. Which seems to me to be something along the lines of, all the usual ways that we have of giving names to things won't work anymore. There'll come a point where we find ourselves reoriented in the world. We won't need anymore what we've relied on. And it feels to me like such a supportive invitation to staying in, but to staying in a way that's not the way that I'm trying to stay in right now. So it's not run for sure, but it's something other than I've never thought about it this way, Lizzie. I'll say it this way. Try to be God in the middle of the situation. The one who has the power to resolve it all.
Yeah. It's such an invitation, thinking about, you know, what you're saying in this way of waking up in the mornings. And as you're speaking, I'm just connecting this into, for me, one of the ways that we work is that we look at our relationship to things and not trying to change everything, like you say, and be God and arrange things just so that I'm completely fine, but to change our relationship, to shift our relationship to whatever's going on. And I was just thinking, as you were talking about waking up this way, that I could relate to this feeling of being afraid of the hugeness of what's coming, of the storm on the field, in a kind of, right, let's get ready, you know, I've got to deal with this, it's coming my way. And I think what Rilke is inviting us to, and what you've just been saying as well, is that we could relate in a different way, where we could so the image I got of myself when you were reading it, Justin, is that I could surrender. I could become that which is trying to get me. Like I could merge with it. I could be it. I could, and that's where the no names thing means something for me. Is like I could be one with something, rather than put up the barricades and batten down the hatches and then wait for the hatches to be ripped off by the wind. And sit there until that happened, fearfully or expecting it to happen. And it was so beautiful listening to that first part of the poem when you read it, because I think that's another thing about Rilke, is that my imagination gets so rich in the reading. And so I've got all of these images flying around my head from all these metaphors that he's using. And to call the storm, or the circumstance that's coming, the angel by which we will be defeated, it speaks to me so strongly of this surrender and this being one with, rather than putting up this fight. And it seems to me to be an invitation into a different story about how to be in relationship to the difficulties that are here. And the line that always gets me is, whoever was beaten by this angel went away proud and strengthened. But then the brackets of who often simply declined the fight. So there is, this angel isn't actually after me. It's an angel. It's what it is. It's not personal. It's from the realm of no names. So it feels like it holds life in this place of life is itself. It's not personally coming for me. My circumstances aren't personally coming for me. The storm isn't coming for me. The storm is just the storm. and I get to participate in it as you say, as not God, but as a human who has the opportunity to work with, to surrender to be one with what comes and maybe flex in the storm or be turned by the storm. I'm just thinking of my body going round in a circle because I'm in a storm. And it feels in this moment like I'm invited into that story of not fighting, but allowing and surrendering through this incredible poetry that just has all these images that help me do that. It's like so helpful and kind to put images in there. So it's not conceptual, it's more a path that I can tread.
I'm really moved by your language, Lizzie, of allowing ourselves to be the storm, to not be separate from it, to be one with it. And I have never thought of exactly that with this poem until you said it. And I can feel, as you say it, I can feel so much in me settling and softening, because maybe this is true for lots of us. When I'm in a storm and I want to be God or the angel in the storm, I want to be the powerful one. I want to be the one who beats it. What I'm really doing is keeping myself very rigid and in a very familiar shape. So when you were talking about body, that was also helpful to me too. But I'm aware that if I think of the sort of imagery of the storm, when I'm in a storm, very often I feel like I'm the one, I have to muster the power to beat this, but I can't. And that's part of the whole thing. And whilst I'm in that, it's like clenching your fists and nothing happen, or clenching your jaw and nothing happening. So from that, it was such a great way, I thought, that you were talking about the relationship that we're in to the circumstance. So from that relationship, there's either beating it or being squished by it, one of which feels impossible and the other one which feels terrifying. So the third path here is letting ourselves know that we could be the same as, like you said, we could participate in it, we could be one with what's happening. And that's a move to let go of the way that we bound ourselves off from. It's no longer other. And I realize that when I do that, I move really differently. So I've been experimenting, I've just been playing around over the last week. One of the things that I sometimes say about Ulysses is that you often tell me that you can recognize me coming from a long way away because of my walk, which is true for lots of us. And I always feel very touched by that. But then I get wondering about, well, what's my walk and how do I move? And how is it that you can identify me so quickly that way? And I've been playing around with simple things like walking differently down the street, moving my body really, really differently and in ways that are unfamiliar that ordinarily I might feel a bit ashamed about because they're not me, they're not the familiar me. And even something really simple like walking down the street and letting my body move with way more range than I normally do is doing something like what you're saying is the possibility in this poem, is there are so many other ways I can be in this other than the one who's dominated by the big thing. And of course the big path is the one who's held by, the one who's cradled by, the one who's part of, the other bit that's really striking me is the one who has the same fierce energy as the storm. Like, what if in a storm, instead of being the one who has to beat it or get squished by it, I just take up its energy. I'd let myself be filled by the incredible power of this storm. And what all of these different moves that were invited by the way you spoke about it are doing for me as I'm talking about them is that they are helping me to loosen my grip on a particular familiar way that I try to be in things. That, of course, like all of us, I carry a familiar way that I've practiced for a really long time, but that's only a tiny part of our human heritage, is to carry this one way.
Well, it's such a lovely feelings having this conversation for me. And it's, I can feel all these invitations of experimentation coming, arriving as things to try. And it's such an invitation for me at the moment to be surrendering to the moment, given that, you know, spending most of all of my time with a tiny baby, I'm so aware that I could suffer everything if I chose to. You know, I could feel, and there's so much going on in me. So in a way, I feel like I feel quite continuously in the what's coming over the field, because every week it's new, like different things happen, and I'm trying to get used to different things all the time. When I've kind of thought, okay, I've got this down now, like I know when she's going to go to sleep or something, then everything changes. So it feels like I can't use my normal rhythm, if that makes sense. Like I can't use my normal walk, if you like, because my normal walk would be okay for one thing, but it's not okay for 400 things. So I feel like to hold this Rilke scene in myself through my day and to allow myself to be defeated, as it says, is such a different way that I could be in this compared to my like habitual small worried self of like, oh gosh, you know, how's this next bit going to be and what's going to happen next and am I going to be able to handle this or whatever. So I feel very invited into that and very, very, very glad that there's a way that there are choices as well, that it's like life is not just one way, but that I am powerful. like to come around full circle, is like I am powerful to make selections, to feel inspired by, to let these things like poems breathe themselves into my body and my life and see what they might bring. And I do have that power, and just that recognition that I'm powerful in that way is a freedom that comes from this invitation to not be what kind of, I guess, like brittle power might be, which is the kind of right, hunker down and batten down the hatches and prepare. That feels so blowable, overable and kind of destroyable. And this other way that we're speaking about feels like I could join, I could dance, I could move with, I could be one of those people that chases a storm and goes, ooh, look at this one coming. I can feel the energy of this in my body and I'm big enough and I'm wide enough and I'm soft enough to let this blow through me and change me and have me. And who I am is completely wildly intact in spite of it and because of it. That feels like, oh my goodness. And so then thinking of you waking up in the morning and feeling afraid and putting myself in your, lying in your bed and going, okay, what does it feel like to feel afraid? To have the choice or to the opening to say, okay, welcome here, rather than I've got to do all the things I can to stave this off, or I've just got to bear it until it goes or something. That the possibility of a dance comes of like, okay, well, what if it is me? What if I let this be who I am right now and not fight it? It just feels like a very life-giving opening where I can feel some joy in it rather than terror or like being petrified and literally petrified of, I don't know what to do, so I'm just going to stay really closed and really like a kind of popcorn kernel and frightened, but that I could wiggle around with it and become jelly-like with it and see.
I'm very tickled by the idea of being a frightened popcorn kernel at this moment. There's something so important in what you're saying that I want to see if I can say back and draw some attention to, because so you know this about me, Lizzie, that waking up in that state is very common for me. And one of the things that I know to do, which is an aside, is to, for example, is to go and swim in the pond. And actually this poem and the pond are very closely connected for me, but I might come back to that in a moment. You said when we wake up feeling afraid, and I think that this is true of the other one that was really on my mind whilst you were talking was grief. You know, the grief of losing people, the grief that we will lose people, or what we'll lose for ourselves and everything. And you said something along the lines of when we find out we don't have to fight it. And I realized when you said that, that was sort of one habitual way for me of hearing I don't have to fight it is to still be in the small position where I'm going to be obliterated by it. But that the move that you've been inviting is this amazing, I think, move of starting to go, what if I am the fear or the grief? Or what if I stood in the place from which the fear or the grief came and was that too? So that's even a different move. It's the place that the angel stands in this poem. And then it's not me against something that I can't even be in contact with. It's life encountering life in some way. So we know ourselves as, and that's the thing about Rilke's poem, we know ourselves as simultaneously being defeated by this, in other words, changed by it, but not from the ordinary, I'm small, it's big, but I have to be big way, but much more like the, what if this is me already? I think I'm just saying back what you said already, but that itself, for me, is such a powerful move. So when I'm trying to fight off grief, or when I'm trying to fight off fear, I'm not surrendering to it in that way. And I can really feel in my own body, as you say it, the sort of the fierce beauty in that kind of surrender, where we start to know ourselves as the very thing from which we have been running, the very thing which we didn't want to get in a fight with. And there is enormous life force in it. To be grief, to be fear, or like I want to keep on saying, to be that which from grief comes and that which from which fear comes. And I don't know if you've ever seen the Jacob Epstein sculpture, Lizzie and Tate, and I put a photo in our Facebook group and we'll put it elsewhere as well. It's carved out of the most giant block of marble, and the Jacob who's been defeated by the angel is being held by the angel, but they're joined together in all these places because it's one block of marble. They're not separate. And the angel has Jacob in a most exquisite embrace. And Jacob is being held. And you can see, I can see every time that I'm with it, what love there is in this. And so my extension to what you're saying is what, it sounds really paradoxical, but feels to me to have an enormous amount of truth and power in it, to say, what if we would let ourselves be loved by the storm?
Yeah.
What would if we would let ourselves be loved by the grief that we're running from, or loved by the fear that we're running from, or loved by the feeling that nothing's going to be all right and I can't do anything about it, instead of trying to vanquish it? Yeah. So seeing, and that's why this last line in the last two parts of the poem where Rilke says, we feel the sinews of the wrestler growing like long metal strings under our fingers, like chords of deep music, which seems so loving to me. And that we can walk away strengthened and proud and great, like we are when we are really deeply loved and we know we're loved by something or someone else. And it fills us with possibility that that's the invitation here. And it's so counterintuitive.
Yeah, so lovely, Justin, and feeling the invitation of being filled up by life rather than fighting it, but being taken by it as well. Like, it's really helping me, this conversation right now. There's a, you know, I have a situation in my life that I feel like I'm in a battle with, and right now I can feel the freedom that might come if I chose not to battle with it. and I could let it be the gift that it is and entertain that being the possibility in it, rather than I've got to stave this off because the feelings that I have around it are too uncomfortable to bear. So I just stave it off. I, you know, like turning away from grief or turning away from some tsunami of frightenedness that might come and just kind of pretending it's not there. That feels like it takes so much energy and so much stress from in my body. I can feel it when I even go like that with my shoulder. I can feel it in my body, like just moving myself, you know, at an angle that feels like my back is going towards something. I feel like if I can turn towards and welcome, the spaciousness comes across me, and I can feel that there are things that I can't see, obviously, if my back is to something. And they might be the things that are for me, and that life might be working for me, and I'm somehow staving it off and turning my back on it. And if I would turn towards, I might be able to perceive a whole different set of gifts, of difficulties, of whatever, but I'd be able to see more and feel more. And that feels like a far more liberating thing than just staying with my back turned and pretending that it's not happening, or trying to arrange things so I don't have to face it, because it's not going to go away. So I'm just really grateful for this, and to feel the possibility in it. It's very, very beautiful. And I love this poem. I think it's another one. I mean, I think we're quite good at choosing sources, I have to say. And I think this one is like the gift that keeps on giving forever. I mean, you know, we could take each paragraph and just talk about it again and again and again. So thank you for bringing this. I'm so grateful.
So welcome. Thank you. Maybe we should do that, Lizzie. We should take this again and again and again for a few weeks and see what happens.
I know, honestly.
We could.
So gorgeous, yeah.
So we're at that time where we have to end, and I want to say, as always, thank you to you, Lizzie, for that we get to do this. Is what a gift and a joy. And thank you to everyone who's with us that makes this something way bigger than just you and I chatting on a Sunday morning. But I'm so moved every time I hear how this is reaching into the world and people are being affected by it. I want to end with a tiny little plug that on the 4th and 5th of May this coming year, so it's 2020 when we're doing this in London, I'm going to be leading our 2-day Foundations of Coaching program in London, in Hammersmith. And it's a wonderful way to get to meet people. And if you want to come and learn with us the way of coaching others that really sort of arises from this whole orientation that we've been talking about these 2 and a bit years, you can check us out on Third Space. We are thirdspace.org. And everything that you and I have been doing, Lizzie, here is on turningtowards.life all the time. You can find every conversation, video, and links to audio and sources and everything there. So we should go.
Thank you, everybody. We'll see you next week.
Bye-bye.